This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Yes, everybody, it is the first of the month. That means it's time to unleash the menu for the Post Wrestling Cafe in December. Way, we're not ending this year with a whimper. We're going out with a bang. We have a ton coming at you, including the Rewind Away that you voted for. This week, we are going back to 1991. It is the gravest challenge of Hulk Hogan as he defends his WWF Championship against The Undertaker. And we are going to discuss this show, the famous tombstone that The Undertaker delivered to Hulk Hogan, and the many stories Hulk Hogan has had in the years that followed, including being asked about this spot in a deposition. What did he say under oath when it came to this tombstone? Okay. We are going to get all of that. And one of my favorite angles of all time. Have you started Survivor Series yet?
Well, I have started. Yes. Okay. You are, of course, referring to Jake the Snake Roberts being eaten on live television by a king cobra. Okay.
I just hope that cobra is devenomized.
Oh my goodness, what a great angle. Did I say Jake? I meant to say Savage. What a classic bit of history.
Did you see this when you were a kid, this angle?
No, I was not watching wrestling yet at this time. So this did not actually take place at Survivor Series. But
no, this airs on the weekend television before Survivor Series, and it writes off Savage from participating on this show, and Jake as well, although they would have a presence, because this Survivor Series is also the setup for Tuesday in Texas the following week. They have a second pay-per-view to sell 6 days later, and boy, do they have the angle of all angles to sell on a week's notice. We are going to sink our teeth into this event.
The show is a bit of a blind spot for me, so I'm looking forward to like picking your brain and talking a lot about like the sort of weirdness of having two pay-per-views, what, six days apart, okay, and just a lot more to come out of it. So that's Thursday in the Post Wrestling Cafe. Get your feedback in by Tuesday, 12 p.m. Eastern.
So also coming up, we will have a coverage this week of TNA Final Resolution, as well as UFC 323 that's going down on Saturday, the final pay-per-view, at least for those in the U.S. and Latin America, and for anyone else who can outsmart their VPN. We also will have coming up this month a review of Video Killed the Radio Star, the documentary profiling Bubba the Love Sponge and the Hulk Hogan sex tape. And Way really wanted to do this review with me. And I said, Way, you know what? There's another podcaster who texted me, cleaner, I got this. And we are bringing in the big gun himself, David Bixenspan, the only person I could imagine going down this path of Tampa radio degenerates, as they all, what I've learned about the Tampa radio scene that Bubba was like king shit in the middle of is just something else. I have already started watching this because this is a 2.5 hour documentary, and I don't know how I'm going to find the rest of the time to finish this thing, but we will have plenty to talk about. So that is coming out later this month. David Bixenspan and myself reviewing Video Killed the Radio Star.
I think you two will be responsible for doubling the amount of viewership that this documentary receives.
Well, it's going to be your one-stop shop for all things Bubba the Love Sponge. Also, for the month that we are approaching, a second rewind away, we will review the first draft from WWE in 2002, the inaugural draft, as Raw and SmackDown are established as the invasion was a bust, so let's try it again. The problem, it was WCW. It wasn't us. People just want to see WWE fight. So how will things go? Take two of the invasion. And it all kicks off with the draft right after WrestleMania 18. We will also have Karen and Bruce covering the New Japan World Tag League final. Captain America from 1990.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious to watch this. I mean, I would much rather see a 1990 version of Captain America than a present day one.
This is not the MCU. Okay. This is not, what's the good looking man? Chris Evans. All right. This is the original. Okay. Maybe to some, the greatest Captain America, the one from 1990 that, some of you might have on Laserdisc. Most of you will probably have never ever seen. Well, Rich Van and WH are watching it, and they will be talking about it in the debut of MCU Retro, which is coming out very shortly in the Post Wrestling Cafe in the month of December.
All right. So you can have all of these shows and so much more, including our archives, including access to the XL versions of Rewind, a Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Most of all, you are supporting all of us here at Post Wrestling by going to postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 a month gets you all of these shows. You can jump up to the double double or espresso level. That includes book club. That includes our audio updates that come out Monday to Friday, even the weekend edition with our own Neil Flanagan as well. And of course, it is December. So as we get closer, yes, we will have the Christmas show. Yes, we will have the best and worst of 2025. Big brainstorming session today, conducted via text, okay, as we are plotting out the best and worst of 2025 when our four minds all come together and my phone blows up in my hand.
John was loving it. He's like, keep these texts coming. I love group texts. I love getting notified.
More,
every
guys.
Second.
I need more.
He's a very one-on-one texter, John is, I think.
All right, everybody. PostWrestlingCafe.com. We will shift gears and head over to Glendale, Arizona, the Desert Diamond Arena. Last number from WrestleTix, 9,180. They ran this same venue exactly, well, not exactly, but a year ago. It was the Go Home Raw before Survivor Series. That show, 13,765. So this is a pretty big arena. And, it was down from last year, like 4,600 people compared to what they had a year ago. And Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett, trying to juice up the numbers, added two by standing in the among the crowd to open the show. As Joe Tessitore mentioned, we are coming off a fascinating Survivor Series.
That's one way of, I guess, describing it, you know.
Fascinating Survivor Series.
Well, at least according to maybe most of the people that might encounter a podcast like this, certainly not the most well-received Survivor Series that they've ever done, to say the least. And fascinating would be one way to describe that.
Yeah, it's like, your friend is an aspiring, like, painter, and they're like, look what I drew. Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's what I say to my kid whenever he brings.
It's a good
home.
Neutral word. Mm-hmm. The arrivals include Dominic and Liv pulling up in a lowrider, and Liv gets out, hugs Raquel, hugs JD, just nods at Roxanne, and then stares a hole into Finn Balor. And out come Io Sky and Rhea Ripley, and Rhea welcomes us to Monday Night Rio. Like, yes. Do we have like sessions backstage where everyone's name is just workshop to, you know, what was Jey Uso's?
What do you mean?
Jey Uso had one. Remember?
With who?
Monday Night Raw.
Oh, well, they do have marketing teams that probably like do sit around thinking about this all day. Yes,
okay.
They do.
Well, it is a Monday Night Rio, and
of course, this is how we name our tag teams in 2025. What's your first name? Done. Rio. At least this one kind of flows.
It works.
Well.
It at least, yeah. If that's what you're going for. They're like sore, but they won the war. Now they want the tag belts. So they call out the Kabuki Warriors. Instead, Charlotte and Alexa come out telling them, you can get your revenge on the Kabuki Warriors, but after we get our tag belts back. It's like, that's not what they said. They want the tag belts. They are not just beating them for the hell of it. They want some hardware here. So Ripley responds, and it leads to Bliss suggesting that they have a match tonight, so they agree. And that would be our main event on the show. War Games is over. Now it's time to fight.
No, this is the real War Games here with the Tag Team Championships. A very simple and pretty logical build to a number one contenders match. And you know what? I would say this felt like a strong main event for Raw. You know, like right now there's a lot of star power concentrated in the women's tag team division, and suddenly having Charlotte and Alexa being added to the mix, well, they just fit right in because there's nothing going on tag team wise on SmackDown. So I'm happy to. I'm hoping this is some sort of permanent move for them, honestly.
Well, you know who was the biggest fan of this impromptu match being made?
Who?
Adam Pearce. He's on the phone to who? We have no idea. Maybe the maybe Ted Sarandos. Like, what the hell? You didn't book a main event again? Who are you, Nick Aldis? It's like, we've got a main event. I've got the last half hour blocked out now because we had nothing. We were going to end tonight with Gunther. So he's got his main event. And then Ivy Nile walks in. She wants a shot against Maxine because Maxine has never beaten me, which I'll take her word for it. And Pierce, ever the negotiator. Okay, you can have the first title shot, but you know, she's training with Natalya. And Ivy's like, yeah, I watch Raw. They've been training for months together. Pierce is like, no, you don't understand. They've got new vignettes now. So Ivy, Ivy's going to get a title match. When? We don't know. She's just got one. What she has done to earn this, I can't tell you. I haven't seen main event in a while.
She asked. That's why she deserves it, okay? She got screen time, and with that screen time, she asked for the championship, and she's the only one who's done it so far, so...
Becky is boycotting Raw because
of just the shenanigans and just, you know, unfair advantages. Referee Jessica Carr, everything's been rigged. Yeah, she's doing this gimmick.
She's boycotted Raw. Smart move, because I have contemplated this for the first week of January. Guy might boycott SmackDown. Heyman and Breaker appear, and they want to talk to Pierce. Pierce wants to know who was under the mask. Heyman says we have no idea who it was. And he wants to talk about how Breaker pinned Punk, and so they go behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
There was this great video on the history of John Cena and CM Punk. It was magic. It made both of us. They just promote this big match. I'm like, Cena and Punk is like the best match they built up over the past month that they are not going to deliver to us. All we're going to remember is, okay, we got like the...
You got it already. Well, you weren't satisfied.
We got the bullshit version of it back in Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's all you're getting.
They also note Punk has not been cleared after War Games, so there was no Becky on this show, and there was no CM Punk on this show.
Mm.
Jey Uso, LA Knight, our first semifinal of the last time is now tournament. So the BFT is blocked right away. Jey hits a suicide dive going into the break, and then the Uso splash is avoided, and it's time for... L.A. Kobashi here with his burning hammer for a two count after avoiding the super kick. And then he did the rapid fire chops in the corner in his orange.
I don't think so.
Tights. No. Knight slips and going to the top and had to regain his footing to hit the megaplex. And then the BFT has turned into a roll up. Jey hits a super kick and we're just into our series of near falls. So the crowd enjoyed this. Uso splash by Jey is turned into a backslide and LA Knight catches him. And Jey just sits in the corner. LA Knight wins. He goes to the finals on Friday and the camera just stays on Jey and it stays on him. And then he goes to the floor. He's banging his head against the desk and then he sees the prime set and he destroys all these prime bottles and he has a fit and storms to the back, and Jey is breaking in front of our eyes. I like this post-match. I liked how they just kind of sat here on Jey. They really let the loss become more the story, even more than LA Knight's win here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been really telling the story with Jey Uso for, since he lost the championship, right? And it's kind of been off and on because there have been so many other things that have been taking place, right? primarily, you know, recently here, we're talking War Games, where they just kind of shut that, you know, this whole Jay Uso self-confidence issue, like, pretty much entirely. So I was really happy to see them pick it right back up, and not just pick it back up, but, like, really kind of drive it to the forefront of the show and with him as a character in a big way on this one. So it I tend to actually be almost as interested in, like, seeing how people, like, how they evolve via loss than how they evolve via win, you know? So I'm actually very excited to see what Jade turns into. LA Knight, like, certainly possesses, you know, I mean, at this point, very much a Daniel Bryan type of, like, you know, audience sentiment, where, like, they always feel like he's being overlooked in tournaments like this. So I imagine this result probably, you know, like, made a lot of people happy. Just enjoy for the week, because it's probably not going past the next week. But I thought the win felt almost a bit of an upset for that reason. And I think it was booked really well the way it ended, with Jay, like, coming very close and Knight basically squeaking by with that, you know, surprise crucifix. So good rush towards the finish. I thought the match itself was very simple and quite conservative, which is the style that I think you kind of come to expect from these two. But you also come to expect incredible crowd engagement, which these two were able to achieve as well. So, yeah.
Are you saying the yeah movement is going to come to an end on Friday?
Very likely. Yeah, it's Friday. It's not even Monday. Huh? Wow.
No, it's SmackDown. They will wrap this up in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
And then maybe Paul Levesque will come out and say, your finisher should just be called the Blunt Trauma, the B+. Oh, thanks.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelley Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelley creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Bayley and Lyra are backstage asking Pierce if they still work here, and they want to get into the tag title picture. And they explain that we just have to be in the right headspace, and they happen to be in the right headspace. Now we just need a match, and they will be under consideration.
Headspace in reference to, I guess, her Jekyll and Hyde character now being in check. So it's not existing this week.
Is this an even numbered month? Because then we're back to doing this character.
Is Mercury in retrograde? Maybe that's what determines it.
These two are a guilty pleasure for me. I think this is one of the weirdest pairings. I think these two have no chemistry, but
Will it pop up in your best of list or worst of list at some point?
It's going to pop up on that show, I think. Okay. So, of course, Adam Pearce, who hasn't seen these two wrestle in weeks, they're under consideration for the tag titles, just like everybody. The Kabuki Warriors then walk in. They blame Bayley for losing War Games because Bayley didn't join them, and calls her an idiot. Bayley says, "You're an idiot." Asuka responds, "I'm a champion. What are you? We're in the main event." So she was both saying that you're worthless, But also, we could have used you to win this game, this War Games. So I would have still taken it as a net compliment from Asuka.
Yeah, not so bad. Mm-hmm.
Nothing here for Lyra. It was like, we still would have been fucked if we had you on our team. Like, nothing here for Lyra. She was just like the extra person here in the scene.
Yeah.
Judgment Day come out, and Dominic puts himself over. Greatest intercontinental champion of all time. Thanks, everyone in the Judgment Day. Couldn't have done it without them. And then brings out Liv Morgan, who gets a big response and says how nobody saw me coming back, including John Cena. And I've heard that the Judgment Day is weak, that it's lost some of its gold and are falling apart, but that all changes now. We're coming for everything, and it's official that Judgment Day runs Raw again. And then she slaps Dominic again and just jumps into his arms. I guess this is their thing now. It's, you know, she was, you know, taking some from Antonio Inoki here.
I'm sure that was the inspiration. Yeah, that's their thing. You can't judge it. I guess it makes me wonder, did she actually intend on slapping him at the pay-per-view? Like,
was she supposed to totally miss him?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe she felt, this is our thing. We like slapping each other, or at least I like slapping you. But I'm not going to do it in the middle of a match, that, you know, because I want you to stay focused. Maybe that was her excuse. Yeah, I thought it was an okay promo. You know, like, whenever Liv came back, I thought for sure it would be coming off the heels of, like, Roxanne and Dom really ramping things up and Liv coming back as a big babyface. But they've chosen not to do that. Instead, they're just like, everything's pretty good in the Judgment Day, even with Liv and Roxanne together, and Liv is continuing her streak, maybe as a bigger heel than even when she started.
There's some subtleties with Roxanne. I think they're going to play that out rather than just go to that immediately, because they did make a point both in the open and in the closing scene with the two of them to at least keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
Next was what I thought for sure was a commercial. So I fast forwarded through half of it before I realized this was just like an actually I thought pretty well produced vignette that they had put together.
I thought this was a trailer for Terrifier 5.
Thought, John? This was Art the Clown, and it turned out to be Maxine in The Sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Natalia is training Maxine. This is now Natty Neidhart. She's just completely changed since we last saw her a couple weeks ago. And slaps Maxine at the end. More Inokiism. And as Natalia's leaving, Maxine yells, "Again!"
Yeah. Hey, I thought this was cool. Really, really cool. I mean,
How many women's tag teams do we have now? Like, in one night, I feel like they built the division on this show.
Oh, this entire show felt like a bit of a renaissance for both men's and women's tag team divisions on the show.
But wait, I'm told there's not enough time. We need more hours to get all these people across. And somehow they established every tag team on this show, like, almost in one night, just reminding you who these teams are.
Well, listen, this is what happens when you don't have Punk or Cody or soon John Cena on these shows, right? But this video I thought was, I mean, really well produced, completely different in tone than anything you've seen Maxine Dupri in. And I thought it made Natalia look like a badass. Like, this to me felt like a proper introduction to the Natty Shooter gimmick she's already been working outside of the WWE. She seems like just a very tough, serious drill sergeant. And I hope it is like, oh man, I hope it plays out well when it gets to the ring, because the vignette itself looks great. It makes her look the most serious she's looked in like years. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this turns into.
It was good. Adam Pearce meets with referee Eddie Arango, who he wants to be his stooge, in the locker room. So the story is that Seth Rollins was seen backstage at Survivor Series without his sling on, but Pierce is not going to doubt WWE medical and knows that someone else was dressed up as Seth, or this mystery figure, at the pay-per-view. So Eddie is supposed to go to the locker room, and no one's going to talk to Pierce because he's a suit, but they'll drop information to you. So you be our snitch and then come back to me. And
he said, I'll take care of you.
I'll take care of you. Okay. So I am sure Vince McMahon had this conversation many a time over the years with various officials.
This might've been like a, you know, beat for beat script from Survivor Series 97 with Vince and Earl.
So
they're continuing to build the mystery here. We don't now we have the added sort of a knowledge that Seth Rollins was walking around backstage, or at least the rumor that Seth Rollins was walking around backstage with no sling. Of course, we can't assume that it's really Seth Rollins. Maybe it's somebody, you know, who looked like Seth Rollins from a distance walking around with, I mean, that really could be any man in the WWE locker room right now who kind of looks like Seth Rollins. But they're kind of making this, I think, a bit more interesting.
Maybe Bert Kreischer knows the answer. You were around, Seth.
Mm.
What intel do you have, Bert?
Maybe.
AJ Styles and Dragon Lee against New Day for the World Tag Titles. They double teamed on Dragon Lee until Styles came in, and they did there was a wheelbarrow by Woods hoisting up Styles for a leg drop by Kofi, and they took over a second time, and AJ rolls to the calf crusher, Woods breaks it up, and then Kingston is hooking the tights, trying to get leverage. AJ still kicks out. And Kofi goes to the Kenta playbook with the running baseball slide dropkick into the corner. Kingston then gets draped on the top rope, and Lee comes off with a double stomp, bouncing Kingston off the rope into AJ's arms, very much like the Young Bucks double team maneuver, but instead of the sit-out powerbomb, into a Styles clash, and the place went nuts for this. Lee dives onto Woods to prevent him from breaking it up, and AJ gets the pin. Very solid tag match that they had here. A cool finish, and the idea is AJ and Dragon Lee, they're going to be fighting champions every week.
Yeah, yeah. I had negative interest going to this match, especially like seeing the New Day be involved in one of just the saddest segment on the pay-per-view. And I had very little expectation, I suppose. But of course, in ring, these four men are still spectacular. And they're showing that the New Day, I mean, despite awful creative that they've been dealing with over the past year, they're still excellent in ring, you know? And
sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but you're wrong. They, as Paul Levesque noted, though, they don't book for good wrestling matches. It's about the story. Okay.
Yes,
don't get lost in this good wrestling stuff. That's not why this match happened. It happened because of the story. And right. If the end result was a good match, great. But that's not what we're aiming for here. Let's not overlook the buildup that got us to this moment.
I completely take it away. I take it back then. Yeah. I'll try not to enjoy the wrestling on these shows anymore.
That Supercard commercial was there for a reason on Saturday to get us here. Okay. Let's not.
The idea of strictly showcasing a division that doesn't get that much airtime otherwise by giving them great space to have great wrestling matches, it worked for your tag team division on SmackDown until you decided to cut that off. It's, of course, working for Ilya Dragunov right now. I don't know why it hasn't been applied to more, you know, sort of less talked about divisions, including Raw's tag team division, which is among, I think, the divisions in the company that needs the most help. So the fact that they're finally dedicating this amount of time to showcasing great wrestling from great wrestlers, I think is a very positive sign.
They only have 4.5 hours. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
You demand too much. Jackie Redmond catches up with Stephanie Vaquer, and it's like, so what now? Well, when you mess with me, you get burned. I'm ready for my next challenger. And Liv Morgan walked in, welcomed her back, and I guess that's our next challenger.
In the distance, I mean, she has to probably win a match or two, I would assume. Or just ask really, really, like, you know, nicely to Adam Pearce.
What about, do we get another potential tag team in this division?
Stephanie Vaquer, right?
And who?
I don't know.
Oh, you mean those two as a tag team? They already broke up.
Yeah, no. I just want to play the clip. That's all.
Okay, thank you. You might have to retire that one. I don't know if Nikki's.
Yeah, I think that one died a death on Saturday.
But let me, like, when did Liv Morgan get this tall? Okay, like, I never thought she was that much tall. Or did Stephanie Vaquer just get really short in this?
Speaking of which, you reviewed Collision on Thursday. Did it stand out to you how much Juice Robinson, like, towered over FTR, Stokely, and even Austin Gunn? Like, when the camera was at a certain angle, like, he was, like, he's not Andre the Giant.
Stokely is not exactly a tall person.
Well, I'm just saying they were all in the ring. It was like, it was the first time, like, Juice really looked tall next to all of these guys.
Anyway. Well, maybe he's been wearing whatever Liv Morgan has been wearing, because she looked like a giant here next to Stephanie Bakir.
Maybe this was another little person that they hired and we just didn't realize it.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe they got a discount last week.
Maybe. Less said about that, the better.
Never showed up at Survivor Series. Another prediction.
That's, you know, WrestleMania.
That's how I wanted John Cena's last pay-per-view to end. Him and Little John. Mm. The Vision come out. Oh boy, this segment. Heyman gives shout-outs to Brock and Drew McIntyre. It was a pleasure doing business with you, sir. And calls Logan Paul the biggest mainstream star on the planet. And he fits right in with The Vision. So this was as much a confirmation that Logan Paul is just in The Vision now.
He's officially in it. It wasn't just a War Games team up. I mean, this seems to be a permanent thing.
So then they promote that the next big Raw is going to be the one-year anniversary of Raw launching on Netflix, January 5th at the Barclays Center, and it will be headlined by CM Punk and Bron Breakker for the championship.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, so that's a big match. That's a match that maybe some thought might have been a destination for WrestleMania, Braun versus Punk, or at the very least like Rumble or something like that.
When I saw that finish on Saturday, I just thought that they can't hold that off for so long. We're talking five months till Mania, and I was thinking more Rumble, like you just mentioned. But like clearly, they want to make this Raw a really, really big deal, and quite frankly, a one-year anniversary. Sure. Like, this company will never miss an opportunity to build to a big show, and I think it's really smart for them. But we're going to get a month building up this episode and this title match, which I think people will look at as like a possible title change, even if they delay it.
So I guess, for lack of a better term, it really does act as a season premiere of sorts for the Raw Netflix, you know, debut, right? They made such a big deal out of last year's edition that I think it makes a whole lot of sense to just make it an annual thing, just to kind of spike a bit of interest, you know, January, the first week of January.
And they'll probably get some promotion on those Christmas Day NFL games on Netflix, just like they did a year ago. Like, you could put Punk on one of those Netflix broadcasts, and it's a big show that you can promote a week out.
As a show on the calendar, it kind of fits perfectly between, well, they got the Cena Saturday night's main event and Royal Rumble, which isn't until the 31st. So to have something essentially...
And another Saturday night's main event in there too. They have a lot in January.
Well, those aren't PLEs, John, okay? Those are just standard live events, all right? These are
standard live events.
Yeah.
I like that.
SLEs.
SLEs.
So, I mean, this feels like even bigger than maybe some of those Saturday nights main event would.
I'm going to use standard live events for now on. Sure. That's a good one.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling Feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show. Plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Breakker is then handed the microphone. And in this moment, I'm a little upset. And it's not because of a Batman that showed up at Survivor Series. No, I'm a little upset because of how easy it was to beat CM Punk. Because I thought I'd have to reach down to another level. But it turns out he's just a soft-ass bitch and another legend living off old glory. And there's a civil war going on in his own house. His wife's a bigger star than him. It will be a fight. I like this promo. Okay, can I just say at the beginning?
I have a lot of positive to say about this.
I can't do Bron Breakker and be serious. Okay, this takes a lot of talent and skill.
Yes.
It's going to be a fight on January 5th. Punk, you tried to break my neck and ruin my life, so I'm going to ruin your life, and I'm coming after every good memory these fans have ever had of you. And he brought up a message that CM Punk gave him backstage at WrestleMania, where he said, "We'll see whether you can cut a promo with the big dogs." And in the moment that Bron Breakker fully won me over, his response was, "Well, la-dee-da." A Hall of Fame soundboard edition. "Well, la-dee-da. Consider the promo cut." because you're going to find out I'm really the best in the world. And he took this microphone, and I swear to God, he put every ounce of strength into just throwing it down. Logan Paul just yells, damn, into the microphone. And Braun just, dude, he hightails it. He leaves everyone in the dust. He just goes back. I imagine this guy got backstage and was ready to run through a wall after this. The rest of the Vision, they're just clapping like a career defining promo for Braun Breaker. Honestly, I thought he was awesome here. For all the talk about, oh, he's in a big spot, can he do the big promo spot? I mean, it was like this guy heard the wrong podcast over the last week or something, and he came out and just cut such a spirited promo. I thought he was great.
What are you talking about? What podcast?
I'm not talking specifically. I'm just saying, like, he read some Twitter comment or some YouTube comment about this guy can't talk. He's a great athlete or something. And man, did he come out all fired up here. Yeah, I just thought he did fantastic. I mean, this was by far the best promo he has cut.
Well, it was probably the most substantial and the biggest audience he had, maybe among the most time he's ever had to cut a promo like this. And, you know, when I grade a Braun Breaker promo, you really can't help but compare it to his uncle. I mean, the voice and delivery are just so, so similar. And if I have to make the comparison, I mean, Braun already sounds smoother than his uncle, which is sort of the appeal of his uncle, I guess. The fact that he's not really smooth and he's kind of batshit crazy. Braun Breaker doesn't really have that a whole lot, but I mean,
he also doesn't have the difficulty of also having to veer off and come up with unique ways to talk about having sex with women in various ways.
That's for later on in his career. You know, right now they're actually trying to make a full-on effort at promoting him as a serious, you know, a guy, not just maybe a bit of a sort of a comedy act. But I think he carries very similar intensity. And he
wait till he gets into his uncle's gangster rap CDs. that gave Scott Steiner years.
That's right. Yes, yes. Holler if you hear me.
Who's this Dimmix? Who's this guy Dimmix?
I did feel like the promo had like a slight teetering towards feeling like your stereotypical angry wrestler promo, to the point where like if he got more angry than this, it might have started to feel a bit more comical. But I didn't think it got to that point. And in fact, I thought it closed really strong with really good intensity. So got some nice digs in there. Like anytime you talk about AJ with CM Punk, well, you're just setting up for a really fiery CM Punk promo in return. So I'm looking forward to Punk's retort. Also continue to mention Rollins here, where you are led to believe that the most likely Rollins' first program, whenever he comes back, whenever he's ready. So the Vision at this present moment are not, they don't know who this third man, sorry, this the ninja man dressed in black is. They're not taking credit for it. Yeah, so no reveals about that yet, but we're furthering the mystery behind the scenes.
Great segment. And then Jay is just in a zombie state walking backstage, and Jackie is just pestering this guy with questions. And man,
she's going for a Pulitzer, man. Christ.
Can I just ask you, how do you feel after the loss? And Jay is like trying to just shut this down. He has no interest in being interviewed. So Jackie, Jay, man, it's me. And then Jay finally says, I don't give a damn about Braun or the Vision. The only man I can blame is the one in the mirror. And maybe Roman was right. The belts do look better on his shoulders than mine. I'm just a big fat piece of shit.
What? Who was that?
That was Vader. Do you remember that? He too having to stomach a loss and have a pushy interviewer get in their face. I'm just a big fat piece of shit.
Oh boy.
But Jay didn't take a wrench to the face, so that was...
Well, wait till you watch Unreal. Maybe that, you know, like, there are questions about his cardio, okay? Maybe he'll say that on that show. You know what genetics he comes from, right? Okay? You know what his dad looks like, all right? So maybe that promo will be coming in the future. I really like this from Jay. I mean, again, months of building up this sort of Jey Uso story, confident storyline. We're finally seeing it pick back up in... I don't see this resulting in him being a heel. I mean, I see this in trying to tell us like a relatable story of somebody having to gain his confidence back. So we'll see how they do that.
Yeah, I saw them going this direction. I just thought he was going to get right to the end and he loses to Gunther, which represents his biggest win this year. And now it's like, how you've fallen now throughout the year, and now Gunther has that win on you. But I mean, that's just a different idea. It doesn't mean it's a better idea. Breaking news. Okay. I don't know why we didn't lead with this. Next Monday, Raw will end and Tom Rinaldi's interview with John Cena will be released.
Wow.
I mean, this has more anticipation than 50 Cent's Netflix doc on P. Diddy that's supposed to be dropping in hours unless this injunction is held up.
Oh, you're kidding.
Wow. They're trying to withhold Netflix from releasing it, but we will see.
When you say in hours, what exactly is that?
Like Tuesday morning, this doc series is supposed to be up on Netflix on Puff Daddy. The guy had cameras following him for the week before his arrest. And now 50 Cent has the rights to the footage, and it's been turned into a doc series. Fascinating. Day one watch for me.
I'm very excited for that. Okay.
Gunther against Solo Sikoa in the semifinal of The Last Time Is Now. This was a really interesting match of how they put it together. So Tala Tonga is in the corner of Solo Sikoa, and he would get involved. Gunther did have to overcome Tala Tonga, but I wouldn't say they ever, like, baby-faced Gunther in the situation. But he did have to... Like, basically, by his standard, these two.
By his standard, he was the babyface, yeah.
Somewhat. So Gunther boots him to the floor. Tala sweeps the leg of Gunther. And then Gunther comes back with chops. They get into all of these big strikes. Gunther is hitting those great-looking lariats and then cuts off a hip attack by landing another lariat. And then it's Sikoa with a Samoan drop. Goes for the Samoan spike, but it is stopped with more chops, and he comes off the ropes and gets caught with the spinning solo, and then it's a splash off the top for a near fall. Gunther ducks the spike, applies the rear naked choke, and goes to the corner, and Sikoa is grabbing onto the corner to prevent the choke and gets Germaned, but rips the turnbuckle pad off. So Tala gets onto the apron, gets knocked down, and Gunther follows, gets booted, and down comes Solo. He sets up for the spike with Tala holding onto Gunther, and the referee warns Solo Sikoa. It was like, is it illegal for Solo Sikoa to use the Samoan spike on the floor?
It
even
is
if Tala's holding him? Like, Tala is the one that is causing the infraction here, not Solo.
Well, maybe they're tightening things up, you know, these WWE referees after, you know, that whole thing with Dominic not refusing to count that near fall.
So. Whatever was going on here, the best part of this is like my most unintentionally entertaining moment with Solo Sikoa, is that he winds up for the spike, and when the referee calls him, he hides his thumb behind his back like it's a foreign object that he doesn't want the referee to see. It was great. Amazing. I laughed out loud at this. So Gunther, with the referee dealing with Solo, nails Tala in his tongas, and then he goes down. He takes Solo and slams the thumb onto the apron, which is going to bring his health meter down. And then Gunther... sends Solo into the ring. This referee, who is just fixated on Tala, still can't turn around, so Gunther sees his opening, kicks Solo into the balls, and hits a powerbomb to win the match. I thought these two had a very difficult task of two fairly protected heels, of not wanting to really babyface either of them, especially Gunther in this situation. I thought they maintained it, and I thought this was one of Solo's better singles matches overall. Like, granted, it's with Gunther, but I found this to be a much more entertaining match than, I would say, most Solo Sikoa singles efforts we see.
It was certainly among Solo's best singles matches, and, I mean, that really is the Gunther effect. I mean, he is the type of wrestler that allows the audience to see the potential of his opponent here. You know, I thought the match did a great job of, well, portraying Solo as almost like an equal to Gunther in some ways, at least in terms of like power, in terms of just dominance even, you know, it was hard hitting, some great power moves, good explosivity. And it was interesting for me to like study the crowd, or at least listen to the crowd in who they would be cheering for, because they were certainly a little bit pro Gunther, but then eventually got to dueling chants, which for Solo, I certainly was not expecting. I like the finish as a way to protect Solo, you know, while also giving Gunther a reason to use a heel cheating tactic in the low blow here. It doesn't necessarily portray his sort of like ring a sacred philosophy, because, well, the other team did a low blow first, right? So this was, in my opinion, a rare occasion where you got to see Gunther playing more of the babyface of the match. And it's a reminder that I think they could turn this guy at any time, and I think he could be a very successful babyface act.
They went 18 and a half minutes. This was the longest match on the show. So I thought they did very well. You know, really both semifinals. I think this was the better of the two matches, but even for LA Knight and Jey Uso, they definitely had a lot more reaction to that match than, you know, the previous matches we've seen in the tournament. Eddie Arango has come up empty. He has not heard anything out of the ordinary except that Seth Rollins was seen. And then Styles and Lee walk in and said, "Hey, we heard Rollins was walking without his sling." Like, yeah, this has been quite the secret, hasn't it? Everyone's heard about this. So they want another tag title match next week. And Adam Pearce says, "Well, we don't have any story. And we don't just throw out matches to have good matches. Well, how about the War Raiders? Hell, we'll face anybody." And so we will get Styles and Dragon Lee against the War Raiders in the culmination of this storytelling that may or may not result in a good wrestling match next week. That's beyond this. That's besides the point. It is the story that gets us there.
Well, what if the story is AJ and Dragon Lee are having really great matches?
That is a story. And why it has to be the War Raiders, I have no idea. But
because you know, they're the only other tag team in the division.
Imagine saying, like, "Hey, we're a wrestling show, and sometimes people having great wrestling matches, people like that." What a crazy idea. December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bitsenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. Byron is with New Day and Waller during the break, and Waller just complains, "It's a great time to be a WWE superstar if you're handpicked, which we're not." No arguments here. They rag on the referee, who apparently is the dumbest referee that in the WWE, and then Grayson Waller says, "New Day didn't even have a full training camp for this title match. We only had 6 days to prepare." And I just thought that was amazing. Great line.
I think Waller is hilarious. And
he's
at this
very
point,
funny, man. This guy in another like situation, I think this guy would be such a great like character. Like he was in NXT, and I just don't know what it is that hasn't really got him over the hump on the main roster. But I see a lot in this guy, and it's not being realized, but he's, you know, even in this, like, going nowhere character, or, like, all three of these guys, like, they're just throwing anything against the wall. This New Day heel turn, I mean, it doesn't get enough criticism compared to the Cena one, but it's been terrible as well this year.
Yes, it has been, yeah. I mean, I at this point kind of feel like Waller's being held back by the New Day. And, I mean, in terms of chemistry, I just really don't see it at all.
And his ex-partner's about to get a top heel position in the division.
Yeah, I just personally don't see it at all with this combination. And I would almost like to see Waller paired with, like, a big man, you know, as a mouthpiece. Because I think that's where his personality can really shine. He can come in and, like, do some good heel work from time to time. I mean, as a wrestler, I think he's okay, but you know, he's in pretty deep waters in this wrestling company. And I think his strength is his talking, and he's not getting to do a whole lot of it as part of the New Day right now.
What if he joined the MFTs?
That'd be hilarious. They could use him. Yeah. Like be the Sami Zayn to the MFTs. That would probably lift up the entire group.
And then we get the dream team together. Talawala. Rey Mysterio will face Finn Balor next week in Kansas City, and he is with Jackie. So he came all the way here to Glendale
that.
Just to talk about next week with Jackie. Jackie wasn't having a lot of success with her interviews tonight. Refers to his bastard son, who has won the Intercontinental title back, and he's going to go through the Judgment Day one by one, and maybe I'll go after the IC title again. Not even like committing to it, just maybe. I'll see. So Logan Paul overhears this and calls that idea crazy. And the IC title belongs to The Vision and warns Rey to step down or else I'll retire you. So Rey slaps Logan. I thought he was going to jump into his arms next and they would kiss. But no, that was the other spot. This was a real slap. And then they get separated, and coming down the pike, we are going to get Tala versus Shorty Rey in the future. Maybe a ladder match based on this blocking.
Could be. This does spell you maybe some of the thinking behind giving Dom the IC title back. I mean, I'm sure it was always the plan, but also expect Rey Mysterio versus Dominic to actually be a program potentially for the IC championship. In the meantime, you're getting Logan Paul versus Rey Mysterio, which is a match they've done twice before, but I don't think they've ever done like a more substantial program. So,
do you know how much heat that would get if they put that on that Guadalajara show in a few weeks? They're not going to. That's
Dom and Rey or
no,
Logan Paul.
Rey and Logan Paul in Mexico. Could you imagine that? That would be fantastic heat.
It would. It would be also really expensive for them. Like
well, I think we have learned like there is a level of match and talent that are not going to wrestle in TNA, that are not going to wrestle in AAA. And I would say this one is above the AAA grade of match.
Yeah. But you can certainly see it for
maybe that.
Sorry. What's the next big one? Saturday nights. Well, no, because that's
they're doing
thing.
All the main roster versus NXT time. I mean, there's a lot of shows coming up over the next.
Well, the anniversary Raw.
Yeah, you could hold this off that long potentially.
Yeah.
And then the main event: Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss against Rhea Ripley and Rio.
Rio and Charlexa.
Oh my God. So they build up to Flair and Ripley tagging in, and they go at it with chops and headbutts. Sky gets tagged, hits an acai moonsault to both. Ripley lifts up Flair for a razor's edge and unfortunately just collapses with Charlotte hoisted, and they fall into the ropes. And Rhea just has to like get back to her feet, lifts her up, and continues the spot, hits the razor's edge because Io's waiting on the top turnbuckle this whole time to hit a missile dropkick. And then the match continues. Riptide is countered by Flair into this great-looking DDT. Bliss hits another DDT to Ripley, and then the Twisted Bliss lands on the knees. So in comes Charlotte, natural selection. Bliss hits the Sister Abigail, and this is Rhea's turn to make the save. And then Ripley blocks Sister Abigail, hits the Riptide, and it's Sky with over the moonsault. But Flair tackles Rhea, making the save. Match is really going at this point. Crowd is into it when the Kabuki Warriors run down, attacking both teams for the double DQ at 14 minutes, 31 seconds. And we have Asuka preparing for a belt shot when Bayley and her sidekick run down. Liv shows up with Roxanne and Raquel. They take out Asuka with a Tejana bomb. And then the closing scene is Raquel and Perez standing with the belts. And Roxanne just looks at the title, hands it to Liv. But Liv gives the title back to Roxanne and holds up both of their arms. So the idea is that Liv is on board with both Raquel and Roxanne Perez, but I think this is a slow burn with Liv and Roxanne Perez, which it should be. I think they can get a lot of juice out of this, and slowly they come, they become the Kelly Taylor and Valerie Malone of this next cycle of Raw.
And it continues to portray Liv Morgan as not just like, you know, an emotional, reactionary, aggressive person, but some sort of mastermind. You know, she did a great job.
She kind of feels like the leader now of Judgment Day based on tonight, like above Dominic, above Balor. Like she was kind of front and center. She was talking for the group. I think that's going to be kind of Liv's role in this.
Part of the fun of Judgment Day, or at least what they were building up towards, you know, before Liv got taken away, is this whole thing that she had going on with Finn Balor, of each person trying to, well, kind of take ownership of the group and take ownership of certain members, but not outright saying so. Like there was a lot of at least sort of like subtle dancing around of like, you know, I don't like you, but I'm not going to tell you straight up that I don't like you. And this immediately kind of like, it feels like another power play by Liv Morgan. She's not going to immediately just like shove a Roxanne out of the group. She's going to try to win her over, or at the very least put her guard down before she will actually do that. And even like, you know, the slap to Dominic, I feel like was meant to make us continue to wonder if she's actually with Dominic, or was just strictly using him, or is currently using him for her own advantage. So I think they brought Liv back in a really nice big way on these two nights. And really this entire show was a great show to reset the tag team division, or at least to reintroduce the current women's tag team division, which at this point feels like the main women's division in the entire company. Certainly these tag team championships, they went from complete obscurity to now feeling like they're the main women's championship in the company, because Stephanie Vaquer is the world champion, and I'm sorry, she's just not a big enough star to like demand this sort of like attention. She's going to face Liv Morgan eventually. Like, that's what they were teasing. So maybe that'll swing back. But for the, in the meantime, like, Vaquer versus Nikki was the title program, and that just does not feel big at all. Jade on the other side, I would argue, is similar. She just doesn't really have the programs, doesn't really have the big opponents. And then you got Maxine and Chelsea, who are holding the secondary championships. And all of that has just kind of resulted in just a concentration of top names vying for this women's tag team division. And it's very exciting to see, because I think they're doing a great job of all this storytelling. So this entire episode felt like a strong rebirth of the tag team division.
I thought it was a pretty good episode of Raw tonight. I thought all the matches had, I thought they were good to above that. I thought that the tag title match was very strong. I thought Gunther and Solo was really great for what it was as well. I enjoyed, like, the Razor's Edge spot aside, like the women's tag main event was a very good main event. The crowd got into it quite a bit, and they had to carry like the last, like, the show ended a little early, but it was like 20 plus minutes for the end that they had. And even Jey Uso and LA Knight, like, I wasn't disappointed with that match either. Like, it wasn't your typical like Jey Uso match sometimes where there can be a lot of drag attached to it. And you couple in the fact like this was a show, they didn't have Punk, they didn't have Becky. And I didn't think it lacked for power, and they're setting up a lot. And I like the idea that you have this big Raw to build to. If anything, though, it's like they have Saturday night's main event, this big Raw, another Saturday night's main event.
Well, outside of Cena, how much time is Saturday night's main event going to get for build, it being all like NXT interactions?
It's really not. Like, I imagine we get the finals on Friday, and you would think they're just going to announce the rest of the matches. Like, I don't know if they're going to shoot angles next Monday on Raw, where maybe NXT talent will come up and issue challenges. But
it might be starting tomorrow, actually, on NXT.
Maybe. You should get that going, at least, of like who is going to step up. And I would imagine by this time next week after Raw, we'll have the whole card, which by whole card, I mean, I'm still assuming
four match
show and maybe even less when you think the Cena, like how much is going to be dedicated to like the match, post-match.
Yeah, are we getting a ceremony? Because like he's not supposed to make any more appearances beyond this.
No. Yeah. I mean, the only reason you could, I mean, yeah, they should. They should certainly do something after the fact and learn from the Goldberg issue. Like, that was the biggest complaint everyone had. It was more so the post-match than the match itself. Yeah. So there you go, everybody. We have feedback to get to, so we're going to say goodbye on YouTube. We're coming back later this week. We've got a full slate of shows. Poison Rana Tuesday night, Pollock and Thurston, and Rewind to Dynamite on Wednesday, and then Thursday, it is Survivor Series 1991, where we will get The Undertaker challenging Hulk Hogan. We're going to have some book excerpts, including from Hulk Hogan, My Life Outside the Ring, and we'll get his deposition talking about this tombstone spot. We're going to get Ric Flair's first WWF pay-per-view.
Yeah, the real world champion.
Yes, and plenty of Vince McMahon calling a man's arm getting chewed off by a cobra. How would Vince McMahon react in a calm, reasonable fashion to such a travesty occurring in front of his eyes on his watch? So all of that can be found. Postwrestlingcafe.com is where you can jump on board a big month ahead to close out 2025. Are you ready, Way?
I'm ready, and I'm ready to go to feedback.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.